there's a right amount of contrast between elements. And the contrast could be color, could be also weight. If there's a big element, then you need a smaller element in the frame to balance it out. Otherwise, you feel like if you look at a picture, then it might be, if it's unbalanced, you feel like it has more weight on one side. Like when you have a car that is not well balanced, you know, the wheels are with less air on one side, and then you feel it wrong when you're driving. It's kind of the same analogy.
This photography podcast is brought to you by Frames, quarterly printed photography magazine. Here is your today's host, W. Scott Olsen, with another fascinating conversation.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another podcast from Frames Magazine. My name is Scott Olsen, and today, folks, oh my heavens, today we are going to some stuff that is straight to my heart and a little bit of controversy as far as I'm concerned as well. We're talking with Eduardo Ortiz. Eduardo is a magnificent street photographer working all over Istanbul and India and South America and Finland. He's doing the kind of work that really I find inspiring and I feel myself a little bit envious because, you know, I want to be in those places too. He is also a wonderful teacher, leading workshops about street photography and not about the kind of, you know, common things that you would think about. He's got an approach which is really smart. He's got an approach which is really thinking about the issues and the potentials of street photography. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Eduardo, welcome to the podcast series. How you doing, man?
All good, man. Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. It was quite flattering, man.
Oh, man. Well, your work is thrilling. It is vibrant. It is present. I mean, it's got a voice to it that is really special in street photography, because, you know, street photography is one of those things that's really easy to do competently, but nothing more than competently. I mean, you can do a really average job of street photography really easily. And so it takes a little bit of effort to find a voice, to find a style.
It's a journey.
Yep, it is a journey. Now, man, tell me a little bit about your background first, because, you know, you were born in South America and in Chile, and you say that it was in Valparaiso that you awakened as an artist. What do you mean by awakened as an artist? What happened?
Well, I was born in Los Angeles in the south of Chile. Mm-hmm. Not much happens there. I just lived till I was 4 years old. And then I moved to San Antonio. And in San Antonio, I just did my whole, you know, the college, you know. And then I went to study music to Valparaiso. And Valparaiso is one of the most, I mean, I would say that is one of the most beautiful cities in South America. And in Chile, definitely the most interesting city. And it's full of art, full of street art, colors, dogs, stray dogs everywhere, cats, you know, you name it. You know, people sleep in the streets. Smells, but it's full of everything, the good and the bad, mm-hmm. You know, it's a place full of life. But at that time, I wasn't a photographer. I was just a musician. I was studying music. I was studying classical guitar. I wanted to be a guitar teacher. Yeah, that was a different time in my life, I guess.
Well, no, let's start with what drew you to guitar? I'm going to make a connection to photography here in a second, but what drew you to guitar?
To be honest, I just wanted to get a girl in particular. That's why I wanted to impress a girl, and that was my way to it.
I think that's the motivation for most great things in life, I think. But
it didn't work out though.
Okay.
But yeah, it was. I mean, in my life, I always my father had put a lot of pressure on me. I had to be this. I had to be that. I had to study. And I was a mm-hmm. good student at school, but music was for me a meditation. It was getting out of the books and then getting into my own world where I can just play. I could learn on my own and just enjoy. So I really got into music the last year of school, and then I said, okay, I want to study music.
Okay,
you know, I just want to study music because I love it.
But why classical and not rock and roll?
I think it was just the first one that was in my reach. So I took guitar classes. There was a really good classical guitar, and then just got in. I think there was something about like consistency, the way you had you study classical music that I liked, because you need to be rigorous, you need to study every day, you know, some hours a day so that you see some results at the end. I think this part I liked, you know, it was had a more structure, maybe. I don't know.
Okay. And at the same time, you're also developing, maybe not the same time, but shortly after, you're also developing what you call a cooking portfolio. Tell me what's going on there.
Well, when I finished my career, I was 24 or 25 years old almost. And then I went off traveling. I wanted to learn languages, foreign languages, like English, French. And so I went to Europe the first time. And I ended up working, well, if you don't speak French and you go to France, pretty much the only job you can do is in a kitchen cleaning dishes, you know?
Okay.
But I don't like cleaning dishes. So I ended up, I would try to learn French as fast as I could to be able to work cooking, because it felt for me that it was much better just to be a cook. I could learn about cooking. And this, I already cook because my grandmother taught me some dishes, you know. I really loved cooking, making bread, baking, stuff like that. But yeah, then I got really into cooking and I worked in really good restaurants in France, then in Germany, then I worked also in Sweden. I even opened helped opening a pizzeria in Turkey. So,
yeah. Now, was there an artistic side to your cooking, or was this basically, you know, short order stuff?
Both. I had both. I worked in a very good restaurant in France, and it was more like, it didn't even have a menu. You know, it was beautiful because what we served was the fresh food that was coming every day. There wasn't a fixed menu. It was just every day if we had a fish, okay, we prepare fish for the people. So every day they were writing every day the menu. So it was super, not art. Yeah, it was art for me. So they were treating the food with passion, with love, patience, with a lot of detail, you know, attention to detail, what I like. So yeah, I had a really good time in France. And then in Germany, yeah, it was also a good place to work at. But it was more like working a lot of hours, and not enjoying the fact of the art of cooking so much. But still, it was a good experience as well.
So, okay, now you realize that you just spoke a wonderful metaphor for photography, that, you know, there was no menu. It's just the fresh stuff that you get that day, and you have to make some art out of it. That's street photography. That's just, I mean, you're describing a restaurant, but you're also describing a way of experiencing a day and of experiencing the world. So, okay, you're in France, you're in Germany. How in the world did you wind up then in Sweden?
Because Chile has many agreements with many countries. It's called working holiday. So it allows you to work for 1 year when you're under 30 years old.
So I remember it being under 30. It was more than 30 years ago.
Oh, really? Okay. You're so much younger, man. You have so much energy.
I appreciate that, but nope. So how did you wind up in Sweden? What were you doing there?
So I just got a visa for 1 year, the same type of visa I got in Germany, I got in France, and I went to live in Gothenburg, and I was working in a restaurant the same way I was working in Germany. Yeah, that's how I ended up in Sweden. And at the end of my time in Sweden, they got me the pandemic, and then I had to leave.
Yeah. Now, somewhere along all of this, a camera winds up in your hand. Yep. Tell me how this began.
I think it was a really like a smooth transition. I started first with my phone. I had an iPhone 4S back in the day, and I was I was taking pictures, and I was like, oh, this is, doesn't look so good, you know. It's not like the place. It's not like what I'm seeing. So I tried to change the camera. So I think I bought Canon T3i, and then the camera was much better, but I realized, okay, this is, well, the results are still crap, you know, I need to. So then I changed the camera. I bought a Canon 5D Mark II at the time, used one, and the photos still being crap, you know. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, I need to fit something else, probably need to fit me, because not the camera, the problem is me. And yeah, so the camera was pretty big. I had a Canon 5D Mark II, and I was more like, I was taking pictures of everything. I was doing landscape, macro, people, portraits, street, I didn't have like a structure. It was just taking pictures of everything that seemed interesting to my eye.
Well, say, no, but what about photography just in general called to me? You could have picked up anything. You could have picked up bowling, you know, for all that matters. You know, but what about making images called to your artistic side?
At the beginning, it was just to share my journey, my trips with my people back in Chile. Because in Chile, it's not that easy to travel overseas. Mm-hmm. The salary is quite low. People have a decent life in Chile. It's more stable when it comes to politics and things like that. But it's hard to have a passport. I'm the only one with a passport in my whole family. I'm the only one who can speak a foreign language in my family. So I just wanted to share with my people what I was seeing, my journey, my trips, the places, different, like the food, the people, plants, animals, everything. Everything I could share was good because it was different.
That is very cool. So, okay, the pandemic comes along, you have to leave Sweden, but you choose Turkey. You go to Istanbul.
Yeah.
You know, out of all the places in the world, I know, keep in mind, I've never been to Istanbul. It's on my bucket list. I can't wait to get there.
You definitely should go, man.
Yeah, that's what everybody tells me. It makes me feel bad. But why did you choose to go there?
Well, at the time, the decision was quite easy. It was the only country that had no requirements when it came to like vaccination or even PCR, even a PCR test wasn't needed. It was the only country that you can just go. And mm-hmm. it was a beautiful country as well. And because of the exchange rate, it was good for me also to go there. After working in Sweden, it was a pretty reasonable option to go to Turkey because it was super cheap. It was open for tourism. And yeah, it was... I just wanted to try take pictures in Istanbul because all the pictures I've seen from Istanbul were like amazing. So I need to go there.
Is this where street photography started the call to you?
It started before. It started when I was living in Sweden. Not the best place for that. I mean, it's beautiful.
Really?
It's beautiful, but people are more distant. It's hard to get closer. Okay. So I was working mainly with more telephoto. I was working with a 50, but never getting super close. People are sometimes, they can call you off if they don't want a picture or be in the frame. It's not the same experience as in Turkey. And for someone that is beginner, yeah, dealing with this distance is quite a thing, you know? You need to learn this. You need to work it from little by little. And it started with maybe with the 85 millimeters, then go into, I don't know, 50, and then work all the way to 35. That is my, like, I think, sweet spot for most of the people. And then I usually shoot with a 28. But you had to work all the way through it.
And were you getting some early success? Were people responding to your first efforts at street photography?
I had a very good... I think I had, when I was a kid, I draw quite a lot. So I have an idea of what looks good, you know, on paper. Mm-hmm. I have a rough idea. But also I was studying in my free time. After my time in Germany, I actually went to Morocco. And I think Morocco was a place where I really fell in love with photography itself as the art. Because I got some of my best shots to date. And I was just a beginner. And I didn't know much about what I was doing, but I was studying photography at the same time. I remember myself being sitting in Sawida, close to Marrakesh, and I was in a coffee studying a photography book and studying composition, lines, and everything. So early on, almost in the same kind of commitment that I had with music, I just applied the same for photography.
Yep.
I had it changed the art form, but when it comes to concepts like contrast, balance, apply in somewhat the same way.
You know, I have always believed that the vocabularies of different art forms really can inform each other. You know, we talk about leading lines in photography. We talk about crescendos in music. And really, you know, they're the same thing. And if you tell a photographer, I need a decrescendo here, or I need something triple forte, that gives them a different way of thinking about it. So that's why I wanted to begin with the photography, man, because I think those early trainings, you know, the guitar and even the cooking, that gives you, you know, a very tactile, a very hands-on way of experiencing art, which then translates over into the image. I said at the introduction, there's a little bit of controversy because I'm going to fess up here. I'm a dedicated black and white photographer. and you have a marvelous zine out there. You are a workshop leader. You are a teacher. And you've got a really, really cool project called Understanding Color. And you talk about your process, your history is that you began in black and white and then moved to color. And you know, I would argue these days, most people, you know, begin in color, you know, because that's just the default. That's, you know, any camera out there is going to shoot in color, you know, to begin with.
The default now.
Yeah. And then, you know, those of us that go to black and white, you know, that's the way we go. But you say, no, you started in black and white and then got to color. So tell me that story. And then I want to dig into this color because you're doing some really interesting work here. You've got some wonderful ideas. But tell me about the process of discovering color.
I mean, you want me to start from black and white till all the way through color? Okay. So, well, when I studied photography at the beginning, it seemed really natural to start with black and white because it was easier to see in black and white. It was easier to find to see line, shape, figure-ground relationship. All these concepts are easier to kind of to digest and to see in black and white than in color. Mm-hmm. Because you have another layer of information. The color is so powerful and so everything in color seemed a little bit like easier to understand, easier to compose a good shot. So I felt pretty. Also, I like the aesthetic of black and white. I loved it. I love it. You know, I'm just now into color, but probably in some time, if I have a particular project, I will do it in black and white. Maybe I know it's not that completely away from black and white. No, it's not that.
You haven't disavowed monochrome. You haven't turned your back on it completely.
Exactly. But the journey now in color is I needed this layer of color to express life, you know, to document. And color is an important part of everything. You know, color mm-hmm. is so important. I don't know, like the meanings of every color. When you go to a country, something like how people look in, how the skin color of someone, you can definitely see it easily in color. Or, I don't know, the clothing, the colors. I mean, I needed the color. You can see, kind of guess the color through a black and white picture, but it's never the same as seeing the actual color. Mm-hmm. So for me, that I'm somewhat in between street and now documentary, it seems more natural and more right to use color in my photography, but also photography in color has another troubles. You know, you have to be careful the way you work with color. Color is not that easy as just, okay, that's the colors in the scene and it is what it is. No, you need to find the right relationships between the colors.
This is the brilliant part of it because you don't just passively say, oh, this is the color of what I happen to be looking at. You are really intentional about color as a compositional element. It's color as a subject in your images. And I ought to tell everybody, I mean, this zine that you put out, this instruction book is really, really very good. It begins with some, you know, basic stuff about the color wheel and complementary colors and analogous covers. I mean, it's a kind of basic vocabulary. So to make it specific, I mean, we remember the color wheel from elementary school, but we haven't talked about it in 30 years. You know, and here you say, no, these colors that go together, they go together because of this, or they don't go together, whatever. But you, I mean, beyond just saying this is how color works, you then take that understanding out into the field. So tell me how you use color as composition.
You gotta start for the color. You have to find the color first, the scene that works fine. So as the same as the elements in the, you need to find a good background, a good place where the colors are rightfully placed. You know, there's a good correlation between colors. There is a good balance between them. And then maybe someone is wearing the wrong color, and then there's nothing you can do. You need to walk away then. If there is something, there is someone wearing red and is in the background and it's not in, in a good position, then the shot, I just walk away. If the colors in the scene doesn't work. So I start by the scene, by the background and the colors. And then I fill the gaps, you know, I wait people to come into the frame, or I just, when I see a scene far, from far away, I just run away because I know that, oh, this t-shirt is the right one for the right shot, for the background or the colors in the whole scene.
Yeah, you say in this scene, I'm going to quote you here, you say, you know, you should familiarize yourself with the color wheel. This will enable you to recognize the relationships between colors and their temperatures and associations. Understanding color in this way has revolutionized my approach to taking pictures. Then you go on to say, memorizing color schemes and actively seeking them out while taking photos is a good exercise. So when you are doing street photography, I mean, I'm looking for moods or emotions, or I'm looking for sort of irony, you know, where things don't match. Is color, you know, the forefront in your brain as you're walking around saying the thing most I'm most looking for is a color palette?
No, I would place different elements in the same value. I mean, if you have a really nice background, all the colors are working, but there's nothing happening, but still the color is not the goal. It's kind of a language. It's a message.
Okay.
So what I do is I find a good scene. I find someone, there has to be something happening, like a nice moment. The colors by itself don't create a picture. It might be nice to look at, but you need a moment. You need something happening as well. Different elements and things, and to be able to put out a nice picture. The color is one of the elements, but then you need to think about the composition, the framing. Framing is really important, right? What you put in inside of the frame and what you leave out. That's as important as the composition and the colors as well. And then also, something has to be happening. It's a lot of elements.
And yeah, I do want to get to one of your other specialties, and this is an understanding of layering. But I'm suddenly thinking about one of your videos, and everybody, these videos are on YouTube. You need to go look them up this afternoon. I believe it was in Kathmandu. You're at a scene, and it's a beautiful scene. It's nicely composed, and you wait for somebody wearing the right color to walk through. You know, the first person that goes through, you say, no, not this person. And then, you know, somebody else comes along. So is that a good example of, you know, you find the composition, you find the framing, and then you wait for the language to be what you want it to be?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's one of the ways. Just walk, and sometimes I wait. I don't try to wait so much in the scene because also the people is in front of me, and I'm really close to people when I'm shooting. I shoot with a 28, so I gotta be super close. So yeah, I try to have different things in different feel. Something in the background, foreground, and middle ground. But yes, if there's someone wearing the wrong color in the background or in the middle ground, and then I have my subject in the foreground, there might be some imbalance. So I'm always thinking about the balance. Balance.
Okay. Well, no, say more. What do you mean by balance?
Balance is there's a right amount of contrast between elements. And the contrast could be color, could be also weight. If there's a big element, then you need a smaller element in the frame to balance it out. Otherwise, you feel like the if you look at a picture, then it might be, if it's unbalanced, you feel like it has more weight on one side, like when you have a car that is not well balanced, you know, the wheels are with less air on one side, and then you feel it wrong when you're driving. It's kind of the same analogy when you see the picture and there's two big elements or just two big elements on the left side, and you feel like the shot is a little bit unbalanced to the left side. Then you need a small element on the right side maybe to make it up balanced. You know, you see the shot and you don't feel like something is wrong. But it's more about guts. It's more about feeling. Because sometimes you don't want that. Actually, you want the viewer to feel uncomfortable. You want the viewer to feel unbalanced. So I use a lot of crooked lines too, like Gary Winogrand. So if I feel the shot needs more energy because there's like music playing or something like that, I will tilt it and I'm going to use the diagonals to give more energy to the shot because it feels it.
Mm-hmm. Let's take just a quick break. We hope very much that you are enjoying today's episode. The very fact that you are listening to this podcast suggests that photography means a lot to you. And if that's the case, you might want to have a look at Frames, quarterly printed photography magazine. We truly believe that excellent photography belongs on paper. Visit readframes.com to find out more about our publication. And now, back to today's conversation.
You know, going back to music, we can start talking about dissonance here. We can start talking about all sorts of things that music would bring over into photography. But so, Eduardo, tell me about this picture. Tell me how balance applies to this wonderful image that has, you know, not only the frame of the picture itself, you've got an internal frame made by the guy's arms, you have the weight of his body, you know, sort of bending over, but then you've got these three background elements. If you were to take your understanding of balance and apply it to this picture, how does that work out?
Well, there's a big element on just in the middle. So that's why I placed the man in the middle. If I put the man on one side, it would have been too heavy to one of the sides. So I create a frame and the man put him placed in the middle. And then luckily I had three men right behind him. Mm-hmm. So at three is an odd number. So always look for odd numbers when you like it's very easy and actually looks always much better, you know? So yep. Yeah, so I have the odd numbers on the background and then I have the man in like with that is looks much bigger, but it's in the very middle of the frame, so that it looks more like it looks even from both sides.
Right.
Yeah, that's why I did it that way, I think.
There's also this lovely element. You have the weight of his body, the visual weight of his body there, but then right next to him, you've got the you know basically the hole or the gap or the internal frame made by his arms. So you've got kind of a yin and yang thing going on there of heavy and light balanced together. It's you know accidental or not, it's a genius composition.
Thank you. Kolkata is one of the most beautiful places to shoot at. I mean, it's full of endless possibilities.
Tell me about shooting in India and Nepal, because everybody has shot there. I mean, and it's so easy to be cliche there. It's so easy to take the same picture that everybody else has taken. And yet you avoid that trap. So, I mean, how do you go about such a well-photographed world and have an individual voice?
I was scared, man, before going to India. Because of the same thing, I've seen so much incredible work made in India. So how can it stand out of this beautiful work out of photographers? I know so many photographers have taken amazing work in India. So I was just, how can I make it work for me? But I just wanted to practice. I wanted to see India. Also, I just wanted to see India. So it wasn't so much about photography, was also just traveling. Mm-hmm. And then also I met my actual girlfriend in India. So,
oh,
I mean,
met
in Bulgaria. We met in Bulgaria, but then we decided to go together to India. And then we meet again in India. And she's into yoga. So she's a yoga teacher now. And while she was studying yoga, I was doing my own thing. I was traveling, taking photos, waking up at 4 a.m. So every day for weeks and weeks just to get the right light. But then just the life itself is just beautiful. And you feel so inspired by what's happening or everything that's happening. I think India is just full of possibilities. So you can be shooting the entire day and coming back home with like a huge amount of good, like reasonably good shots. But yeah, then the problem is how you get out of this, the trend, what usually people do in India, the portraits and how can you make something more unique. I was scared at the beginning. I didn't have exactly so clear what I wanted out of India. I just wanted to see it. I wanted to experience it. I wanted to try the food. It was a whole thing, a whole experience.
And, you know, the whole experience obviously informs then the photography, because the more you learn, the more you learn what to look at and what to look for. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have a video about layering.
That was an interview done by Gareth Banks, a Welsh photographer. It was completely improvised. He was saying every day, we were sharing some time in Istanbul, said, "Yeah, man, you're so into layering, and I just can't see this type of shots. Would you mind if I go with you in a day and just follow you and try to see the way you shoot?" So, okay. I was scared, but okay, let's do it. You know, why not? Mm-hmm. And so he was following me around Istanbul with his GoPro and asking me questions, and everything was completely improvised. But it was beautiful.
But tell me what, I mean, I know foreground and background, but, you know, just like, you know, using layering as a decision process when you are doing street photography, you know, just like using colors as a decision process. I mean, I know you do because it's in the video. You actively seek out those images that have a really complex sense of layering before you ever press the shutter release.
Yeah, I do it. I don't look them. Do look for this type of shot because they're more complicated. But I want to show how complex is life. So life is not one layered.
Right.
So why would I shoot life in just one layered? Life, you know, you see in a scene. There's a dog there. Maybe there's some rats. There's someone in the middle. Someone in the back. So life is complex. So I want to show life as it is, and for that I need layering. I want to show different elements and how the elements sort of dance with the background, and everything comes together. You know, I like this. And you need to be more active when you're taking pictures and you're doing layering. You need to be more aware of everything that's happening around you. From your eyes to your ears, you need to be listening what's going on as well. I never use earphones when I'm on the streets, because I even use my ears to know what's going on. So yeah, I just love this way of shooting.
You know, it's a little bit counter to what a number of people do in street photography, because a lot of, you know, street photographers will shoot wide open. They want the shallow depth of field so they can isolate a subject and sort of, you know, make that subject the star of the framing or whatever. You've got tremendous depth of field in your pictures.
F-16 all the way through.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I shoot mainly the F-8, F-11, F-16 most of the time. If there's not enough light, F11, then F8. But I shoot sometimes in the day at 800 ISO, sometimes higher, so that I can have more depth of field.
Are there issues for that approach if you're doing night photography?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I cannot do exactly the same at night. No, it's more. I need to shoot in the light and under sun, bright sunlight, most of the time.
Okay. Because, I mean, you know, I'm admiring how complicated, I mean that in the best way, your images are, where the point of interest is not a single point. It's all over the place. And you can spend a long time looking at your images and just sort of traveling through the different narratives and the different stories that are in there. You lead workshops. You've got one coming. We got a couple coming up.
Actually, I have a couple of coming. I'm organizing with some friends a couple of workshops in Chile, in Santiago and Valparaiso.
Oh, man. Okay, so tell me what it's like to be a student in your workshop. What am I going to learn?
Well, first, you will learn, I mean, the most important thing, I think, of is learning how to approach strangers, how to deal with the distance. And I can give people a really good, I mean, people are nice. You just need to be good with people, that's all. You need to smile, mm-hmm. You need to be respectful, you need to respect people, and then you will get, I mean, it's going to be so much easier. I've seen some street photographers that are a little bit too aggressive, and then they get aggressive with people. Then people, of course, they don't want to be in the shot, or they cover in the faces. If I see that, I just walk away. For me, the people are more important than pictures, all the way.
Yep. You know, I use a 28mm just like you do, but you and I both know a number of street photographers that go for the long lens, and you know, they don't even want their subject to know they're in the same block. Do you have a problem with that approach? Is that not quite ethical for street photographers, do you think?
I mean, it depends on the photo. If an 85, I think it's way too far away already. I mean, it's more about the feeling I have when I see these pictures. I feel like separation. I feel there's a gap between me and the subject and the photo. And I don't want that. I want to feel that I'm there and I'm experience the shot. I'm in the eyes of the photographer. And for that, you can use like a telephoto. Telephoto right away gives you this kind of paparazzi kind of vibe. I don't know. I just don't like it, man.
Well, a couple more questions. I want to ask you about some of your portfolios, some of your projects. And we're going to go way back in time, you know, an entire 3 years here, back to the black and white days. Tell me about A Day at the Cotton Castle. It's a beautiful series.
Thank you, man. That was the first series I did in Turkey. And it was during the pandemic. And I was just blown away by the place. And it was like a bubble, and the world was falling apart, you know, countries under restrictions and, I don't know, like the lockdowns and people getting sick, people dying. And this place was like a bubble. And everything was perfect in this place. Nobody COVID seemed to be something of the past or never existed, you know. That's why I shoot that.
Tell me about these images. Tell me what you were going for.
It was just a normal day. It was just a normal documenting a normal day in life. Like, but it feels weird to document a normal day because it was during this kind of period of COVID. But mainly I did it in black and white purposefully from the beginning because it felt like a dream.
Okay.
Literally like all the place is white, this color, like, it's like cotton, Pamukkale, this means cotton castle.
Right.
In Turkish, and this place was just like out of a dream. So that's why I shoot in black and white, because people usually dream in black and white.
Did you shoot in black and white, or did you process in black and white?
No, I shoot in black and white. I mean, in my mind.
Right. Okay.
I was shooting in color, but I was purposely thinking in black and white.
Mm-hmm. And right next to that on your website is Indian Tales. So you. So you've got the monochrome on the left and these vibrant colors on the right. Is there a theme to Indian Tales other than just these are all in India?
No. It's a series I'm working on at the moment. I think the more I shoot in India, the more I'm going to find the theme. I think the theme is going to find me in that. Shooting in India was more learning. It was for me a learning process into color photography too. I had the knowledge. I mean, sort of knowledge. I was studying for a while color photography, but I didn't put all these elements into practice. So India for me was the perfect playground to just see if I could see in color, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah,
so for
I do.
Me, that was a project to prove myself. That was a project. See, okay, can I take pictures in color? Because India, for one side, it's full of things happening, but at the same time, sometimes there are too many colors. There are too many things. It's too cluttered, and you need to sometimes simplify it. Kind of reverse thinking the colors, and I don't know. It was an entire journey.
Oh, and they are absolutely magnificent shots. You said something. Last question here. You said something just a second ago that I find really good advice, and that is that you said that you're going to let the theme find you. So many photographers that go out and they say, "I am looking for X, whatever X may be," and I think the street photographer, you know, goes out and says, "I'm going to let the world speak to me, and whatever I find interesting will become apparent as it goes along." Are along those lines, are you a patient series photographer?
No, I just go randomly. To be honest, I just go out and I'm going to feel amazed. That's all I want to. I just want to.
That's all. I just want to. I love that. How often are you amazed?
Very often. The world's beautiful. You just need to find the beauty. But yes, so many things happening all the time. I just came to South America, to Buenos Aires, and it's so different to shoot here than shooting in India. I came all the way from India to here. It was 2 days traveling with an upset stomach. It wasn't really nice, but but it feels great to shoot in a place where people speak Spanish and I'm aware of what's going on. And it's a whole different thing, you know. There's not so many things going on. It might not be as photogenic, although it's beautiful, but it's different, you know. And that's what I want to feel. I want to feel amazed. I want to feel like to breathe. This is beautiful. That's all.
Yeah. Is it more difficult to be amazed when you know the language and you know the culture and you know the setting?
I would find out because I've been here for 2 weeks only. I haven't been in South America for 7 years.
Oh, okay.
So this is the first time I'm shooting in South America.
Well, I wish you a lot of amazement. I hope.
Thank you.
Eduardo, this has been a wonderful conversation. I'm a great fan of your work. Clearly, we're going to have a link to your website and your Instagram page. And that's one thing I forgot to ask about. You are the curator of two Instagram sites, one called Dreamin' Streets, the other called Street Photography Brazil. Tell me about those.
I was invited first to Dream Streets. I know that most of the people that is participating in the group. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful to create work. I haven't been so responsible last few weeks because I've been pretty busy with traveling to South America, and I'm teaching now Spanish online. I should be more participant of the mm-hmm. two groups. I feel bad about that, actually. But yeah, it's been an amazing experience to have to see all this work curate. And curate is not as simple as I thought at the beginning it would be. It's not. I thought, okay, just put some pictures together and then that's it. No, it's not that easy. The picture have to work, the theme has to work, the colors have to work all work together. When you put in three pictures at a time, you have to do a nice... You want to do something nice with the picture and actually be respectful also with the pictures. Sometimes the pictures, the people, when they post them, they have a frame, and sometimes you don't want that frame. So it's not that easy. It's not mm-hmm. as simple as it seems. It's just repost a picture. It's not as simple as that. But it's beautiful work. It's beautiful to exercise. I think it's a beautiful exercise at the end.
Mm-hmm. I think... making decisions about other people's work is a really, really good way to make decisions about your own work as well. Eduardo, again, thank you very much. This has been a brilliant conversation. I'm a great fan of your work. I wish you the best of luck, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you so much, man.
Frames. Because excellent photography belongs on paper. Visit us at www.readframes.com.